Hello, everybody. Welcome to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host tonight. Sarah Jane's out on an invest, so I'm flying solo by myself tonight. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight, we welcome back John Temporilli and Bob Davis from Planet Paranormal. Gian's an author and co-author of the book Heaven, Can You Hear Me? With Mr. Peter James. And Bob that's with us has caught some excellent EVPs from the Queen Mary that pretty much duplicate some of the things that Peter James had caught when he did an investigation there. The last time they were on the show, we had some technical difficulties, so we're glad to have them back with us tonight. And, gentlemen, are you here with me?
I'm here with you, Gil.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Bob. Thanks, guys, for coming back on. Slept in a bit today, huh, Bob?
Yeah, the old alarm didn't go off. Sorry about that.
Hate when that happens.
Yeah, it's only 1 o'clock in the afternoon here.
Still,
yeah, I had a root canal yesterday, so I had a rough night.
Oh no.
Yeah.
And that's no fun. It's gotta be painful.
Yeah, it is. But I'm good to go.
All right. Thanks again for coming back on with us.
Well, hey, thanks for having us back on.
Sure. We'll start with you, John, being the co-author of Heaven, Can You Hear Me? With Peter James. We'll just start at the top. And how did Peter, I'm assuming all of our listeners are familiar with Peter James, as most people in the paranormal world are, but how did Peter ask you to write this book, and how did you meet him?
Yeah, just in case, not everybody is familiar with Peter. He had the white hair and the black mustache. A lot of people recognize him from that here in the States, from a show called Sightings. It used to be on Fox just before a brand new show in the early 90s called The X-Files. And so that was a Friday night that my now wife, back then when we were dating and going to college, we would watch. And then the host of the show, Tim White, you know, every week would say, let's check in with Peter James as he investigates Alcatraz or various locations nationally, and that was a big highlight for us because Peter was always able to communicate with spirits in a different way that would elicit a response that was audibly picked up, and the sightings crew would have experiences along with Peter, so he could generate certain activity and ultimately communication with spirits. So that was our first introduction to Peter James, and years later, for our 10-year wedding anniversary, we wanted to do something different. We live here in the Long Beach area and of California, right, by the Queen Mary, and she just kind of looked for ghost tours, that type of thing, on a work day. And she called me into the office, and, she was just on her laptop, just researching the Queen Mary and what they have as far as paranormal tours. And there was Peter James's image that he was actually coming back to the Queen Mary to give paranormal tours. So we signed up, went along, and started. We could hear Jackie in the pool area. He took us to various areas of the ship. It was a group of about 20 to 25 people. And after we came back, our daughter was really jealous that we went on this, and so we took her a month later. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that was Peter's last tour, and before he was admitted to the hospital and never came out. But at that time, I just corresponded with Peter. He gave out his phone number, his email address to everybody in the group, that if anybody had any questions or concerns regarding the afterlife. There was a woman on the tour, the first tour, that was visibly shaken, just she'd lost a sister. And so he stayed and just made sure until like 1 a.m. that everybody just had all the questions answered they could possibly have answered. And so I wrote him a lengthy thank you just to, that he was a part of the group and a part of the dinner, the tour, everything, and just wasn't what you typically expect of a celebrity that would, just address a group and then just, here's an assistant, they'll take you on the tour. He was a part of every aspect of it, even though he had great breathing complications that you could tell in throughout the course of the tour. Mm-hmm. He corresponded with me back and forth, that just like, oh yeah, if you have any further questions about the afterlife or anything, feel free to let me know. I wrote him about a project idea that I had for some time that I just thought maybe he could benefit from, and so he wrote back to me, I love the idea, can you outline it?
Right.
And so I sent him a 7 or 8 page outline, and then based on the way I wrote that, he says, I love your writing, will you help me write my book? And then I said, well, yeah, so he started sending me over file after file of all these things that he had compiled over the years of just investigations, how he helped law enforcement solve cold case murders that led to the incarceration of murderers, and just everything that documented every chapter of what he wanted for a book. And so with that in mind, I met with him like a week after that with my wife, and he showed me how he wanted the layout of the cover to look, how he wanted the table of contents laid out, just everything possible of how he wanted the book, and ultimately that he wanted expressed to me that he wanted it to be his legacy for his fans and for his family ultimately. And then a week after that, he went into the hospital and never came out. So it left me with the book to complete for him and get out to the fans and establish something, a forum, which is the myspace.com/PeterJamesLives, that, you know, I with his former personal assistant, best friend, and his family, supplied me with the images and the footage content of the old sightings episodes that I've now been able to load onto the site.
Huh. Now, had you written books before?
No, just I've had screenwriting classes and wrote screenplays, you know, and just sort of shopped those around, but I have a broadcasting degree from the University of La Verne here in Southern California, and with that I had several courses on syntax and grammar. So really it was, he wanted me initially to take the book and put it into book format of everything that he sent me, but what I noticed was unique when he sent me all the files was that he wrote like he spoke. And if anybody knows how Peter James spoke, there was always a dramatic flair to how he spoke or spoke about, you know, the world that we aren't familiar with, that, you know, the world of the unknown and afterlife. Mm-hmm. And so he painted pictures as he spoke, but he didn't put commas or semicolons or anything along the way. It was just basically how he wrote and notated his investigations. And so I convinced him on our final meeting as well to leave his voice as intact as possible for the readers, you know, that can hear his inner voice as you read. So he agreed to that, and therefore I just corrected everything he wrote, basically, and I found a publisher that was, you know, contractually agreed to keep his words intact and not change anything. So that upon their approval on that, that they were the publishing house, everything moved forward, and ultimately there was the book with all his words completely intact.
Oh, cool. All right, Bob, how did... Have you worked with Peter James before?
No, not, I haven't worked with him directly. I just I've talked to him on several occasions and you know, reviewed evidence with him on a few occasions and stuff like that. And I've just been a big fan, like John and Shirley are. Been a big fan ever since the beginning when I first saw him. And you know, kind of have based a lot of, you know, the way I handle myself during an investigation on the way Peter does.
Right.
But other than that, you know, no formal investigating with him. I was had planned to go with him, you know, and then Peter took ill, and so that opportunity passed me by. But
he's well respected in the paranormal world. I think he's a mentor, someone to look up to, you know, for all of us. I know a lot of us feel the same way about it. Why do you think the Queen Mary is so active?
You know, I don't know. I'm getting a lot of static here. Can you hear that?
Yeah. I think that's on John's end.
Was it on my end?
I think
so.
Yeah,
I just unmuted the microphone. But, I have... It's not through the speakers. I have, like, the headsets on and everything. Bob, did you want to answer that?
You know... I assume that, you know, a big reason for it is, you know, one, I've... Just in my experience, I've noticed that, you know, anything on the ocean seems to be, you know, predominantly more haunted, you know, any kind of boats or ship or anything like that. I've actually lived on a haunted yacht for quite a few years. Uh-huh. So I think somehow the conductivity of the ocean has something to do with it. I also think that, you know, maybe the metal of the ship itself, and then the fact that you have the sheer numbers of people that have traveled on the ship as well as have died there on the ship, you know. It just lends itself to a large amount of, you know, lost souls or souls that tend to be hanging around for whatever reason.
I've just read an article recently about water and you know, the spirits and ghostly phenomena, how it possibly conducts activity, just like you said. Have you researched any more into that theory?
You know, I haven't done any real specific research. I have read articles here and there about it myself. But mostly just, you know, I've done a lot of investigations on other ships and stuff, and it just seems to be that we have a lot higher rate of activity on ships, you know, and boats than we do at land sites. So if you have a really haunted location that's on water, it seems to perform a lot more regular than, say, an equally haunted location like, say, Waverly Hills or something that's on land.
Right.
You know, and so it just seems to be a natural assumption, you know, that there's something going on with the water and the, you know, possibly the metal or whatever. But,
sure.
You know, even on wooden yachts, you know, I was on this wooden yacht and this thing was haunted as all get out, and it was only 57 feet. So it was you're crammed in there pretty good with, with these ghosts. So that was a really interesting experience.
That's just it. Like you said, the boats are so, I mean, even some of them are enormous, but there's so many people that are confined to one small area, and so much has happened on a lot of the ships, and especially the Queen Mary.
Right. Sure. There's also, too, as Peter describes it, with over 600 active ghosts, is how he puts it, that it's the most haunted location in the world, in his opinion. And there's been a lot of tragedy on the Queen Mary, especially. It hit the Curacao, and there were several hundred lives lost, and that was an escort ship off the bow. There were people dying of heat prostration in the Middle East on a routine run with servicemen due to lack of poor air conditioning and other cooling fixtures. And there's just other tragedies that have happened on the ship. As you go along there and you take some of the tours, you see banners up, and they'll list all the different tragic deaths that have happened, and a captain that drank strychnine by accident, thinking that it was his drink that he had sitting next to him.
Oh no!
And there's all kinds of odd deaths that have occurred. So Peter James had communication with a lot of these spirits that died tragically and untimely.
Huh. Back to aim this at John again. Is there any place we can see footage of Peter James conducting, you know, on sightings or any of his other investigations?
Yeah, I have some. They're limited as far as sightings hasn't, and it's kind of sad, too, that it's not a show that's just been reissued and out there in circulation. But if you go to the myspace.com/PeterJamesLives, I've loaded some of those videos on there that have, you know, the famed ones where there was the father getting the scratches on his stomach in Atchison, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually made into a movie as well that Henry Winkler produced. And it's Sightings, Heartland Ghost, and it was the whole ordeal, and also involving the Sightings crew that experienced that as well. But it's one of the famed ones that, you know, Peter had done an investigation on that brought him fame, as well as the Queen Mary, where he's calling out and talking to Jackie, mm-hmm. the talking ghost child, back in 1991. And as Bob has the evidence from the Queen Mary Paranormal Retreat back in December, went down there and captured over 15 minutes with Jackie that's, you know, just indescribably the same voice nearly 20 years later.
Right. We're going to play that for our listeners in just a little while later in the show, but it's amazing. It really is. What do you think sets Peter apart from others with, you know, his same ability?
Well, I haven't seen any forum or anybody since, and, you know, I'm a follower of the paranormal, of programming and of writing, and he truly goes through his gift as in the book of his onset, as, you know, early on as his development as a child with a psychic ability. And as well, what you notice about Peter, there isn't this overactive, you know, talkative, interruptive sort of, you know, manner to how he speaks, and, you know, you can truly see and sense a gift within Peter when you actually hear the same entity that he's communicating with
mm-hmm.
on tape, or if it was on the sightings episodes while he was right there in frame, that there is a genuine communication with the afterlife. And before, in 91, when it, you know, most of the sightings episodes were, he could be in a small town in another state that he would just be flown to and then traveled in a town car without any knowledge of what state he was even going to, and then you know, coming up with information in private residences, and the sightings team would go into dusty archives and Dewey Decimal Systems going through and verifying all the names and dates or locations that somebody, you know, was killed or tragically died in a location, and, you know, Peter would come up with all that information. So for me, it was, and my wife at the time too, and still just the only real proven genuine sort of a spokesperson or somebody that could really present you with that information and really convince you to be a believer. And, you know, I haven't seen anybody since that really has that sort of spot-on communication. You know, there are some here and there, but Peter James for me was just a big standout as far as that went, and sort of a history to it now of, you know, being sort of like a grandfather, as he's been coined too, the godfather of the ghost world. So a lot of people look at him as sort of like, you know, the early on rock star of the entire you know, field of sight, of being having a psychic ability.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, especially on television now, a lot of psychics or mediums, you know, that I think are a bit over the top, actually. And you know, it's sort of hard to believe, but, you know, I've seen Peter in some of the old sightings and the ISPR videos that, you know, he was with Derek Acora, actually, in one of those. And he is an amazing person.
He was part of that era, too, that if there was any activity or if he was, you know, you can see it in certain, you know, footage that's on the MySpace as well, that if he was burned on his cheek or slapped or pushed or shoved, he didn't run out of the area. He stayed, and that was the point that he would move forward. It wasn't like, you know, okay, the camera person darts out the back room and he goes running another direction. There wasn't any of that.
Right.
If there was any activity, that was the point that he moved forward and remained calm. And just, and on our final meeting, when he was telling me about how the ghosts were actually his friends from growing up, and so he wanted the book and as well his memory and his legacy to be a true representation of that these are not mythical creatures or not something that's, you know, demonic, and they are who they are in life as they are in death, as he would often say.
Exactly.
So if there was any haunting activity, it was the person that they were, whether they had some type of prejudice or abusive towards women or anything, that's who they were in death, and that's who we would communicate with and ultimately deal with. But, he wanted everybody to know that those were his friends and they're not people to be afraid of if you have any paranormal activity in your home, and that there are ways to deal with them as well.
Right. When, it leads me to my next question, when did he first discover his ability to see ghosts or spirits?
It was around, he was 5 or 8 years old, as he recalls, and the book is Heaven, Can You Hear Me? And what it goes over is, as far as that title, is he lived in a home with his mom, you know, that was a single parent, and it was adjoined with a upholstery factory, so it was sort of a small apartment that he was in, and there was a piano that was left there that was really old and worn down, and as they moved in, they started having just paranormal activity right off the bat. So his mom would blame him for it and was a little bit abusive towards him because he said, this isn't me doing this or making these noises at night.
Right.
And, you know, during the day she would try to sleep with the upholstery factory going that was adjoining, and at night have all this activity and the piano would start playing. So she was abusive towards him, but then at the same time, he accounts how at certain times he started taking piano lessons and a boy would show up next to him on the other register of the keys and start playing that, you know, knew how to play the piano. And at the same time, along the way, he had a girl and another boy show up that is as clear as you and me if we were just having a conversation, just constantly playing with him in various areas of the apartment. And it wasn't until he was sent to a grandparent's house for the weekend and just stayed with them that the piano kept playing during the night, and then the mom started asking more questions and losing a lot of, you know, that nature that was just, you know, there's something wrong with my child. And so he explores that in the chapter, but who the children were from a family that perished in a fire 30 years earlier. And so later on, he was able to find a newspaper article and prove to his mother that, you know, these are the names of the children that I've been telling you about, that I've been playing with in the apartment. And she suddenly became a believer. But ultimately, there was the one child that stayed in the attic portion that would always call out to his mother and kind of, you know, broadcasting, like, "Heaven, can you hear me?" at times. Oh, and that's how he came up with the title for the book.
Oh, no kidding. So his mother wasn't very, didn't believe him at first, actually.
Right.
Yeah. What, his father?
No, his father, I guess they divorced early on, and she got sole custody, so I don't know the full history about his father, but, yeah, it was just, that's what he explores in the chapters, is that, you know, his mom is a single parent, just uh-huh. raised him, and did the best she could as a hard worker.
I see. What was his religious background?
Well, he was an ordained minister at one time, and he actually performed weddings for couples, and also at his memorial service that was held on the Queen Mary, his best friend spoke, and he'd been doing that for 30 to 35 years, and every couple that he joined their hands are all still together.
Oh, and, really?
You know, they stay in contact with all these various couples, and there's some images of them on the MySpace as well, but yeah, they're all still together. But what happened along the way, and as he explains as well in the book, is that his psychic ability didn't mesh well with what his religious education, you know, was providing him with. So he had, yeah, just various problems with the schooling, what he was traditionally taught, and the things that he felt were archaic, and where they were explaining that afterlife places are, didn't mesh well with what he was experiencing and seeing firsthand of what there is out there, and you know, the demonic side of what was expressed not long to him. You know, there were just various facets that didn't mesh well with, of course, somebody with an ability like that. So, yeah, he was traditionally trained and raised Catholic, and it's just, yeah, with that type of ability, it just doesn't carry over well with his beliefs.
Right. You mentioned, you know, the MySpace, Peter James Lives. Is there another site that's you know, dedicated or tribute to him?
Yeah, that's the only site that I know of. There's YouTube clips that other people have put together and various memorials that, you know, people have put together, various images of Peter over his lifetime. Those are on the MySpace as well, but there's some that are really well put together that, you know, if you just put in, you know, if you go to YouTube and Peter James, different things come up where it's, you know, images of him on the Queen Mary with, you know, music beds and various memorials. But as far as another website that's been approved by the family or that's out there, there isn't anything today. There was someone that Peter's brother was going to have do a website, and just for the cost and everything else, and the push of the publishing CEO of the book and the timeliness of it coming out said something has to be out there now. That's when I put together the MySpace with the family and friends' approval, so that's really the only thing that's out there right now until, you know, someone can, you know, the family and everything can put together something that's more dedicated and an actual website. There's the MySpace.
I gotcha. Now, where can people get a hold of the book, Heaven, Can You Hear Me?
Well, you can go to the MySpace.com/PeterJamesLives. There's offers of discounts on there that are more real-time that say what Amazon or Barnes & Noble are offering right now. You can go to Amazon.com, UK, Amazon France, Amazon Germany. They offer the book as well. And, you know, sort of, you know, brand new breaking news that the book's going to be offered 45% off through Amazon.com as well. So what the publisher is trying to do and expressed across to me is they want to really get a push to get these into all the bookstores. So when you discount something that's close to 50% as possible, they can take that and then, you know, with a marketing campaign, they can get that, you know, rep approval and support for all the major booksellers. So that will also be, I know for sure, on Amazon.com starting around March 1st, and which is right around the corner. And as well, it'll be offered on the site, too, that you can purchase it directly from the publishing house in New York.
Oh, that's excellent. All right, we're going to take about a five-minute break here. We're talking to John Temporilli and Bob Davis. So everybody that's listening, we're in the chat room if you have any questions for our guests. I don't know if you're in the chat room, Bob, are you?
No, you know I'm not. I didn't have a chance to get on there. Sorry.
That's all right.
I'll try to get on during the break.
Okie doke. We'll be back in about 5 minutes, so don't go away.
Yeah, well, the latest news in the paranormal world. Listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, what's up? This is Cliff speaking for Rad. Give up the keys. Choose a designated driver. Music lives. So should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
If you would like to be a guest on Soul Seekers Radio, visit our website or contact us at soulseekers@ntlworld.com.
This is the Para X Radio Network.
When a child is abducted, every second counts. That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet broadcasting community and this station.
right, we're back. Welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight. I'm here with John Temporilli and Bob Davis from Planet Paranormal. You guys back with me?
Yeah, hi, Gil.
Good. Let's get to you, Bob, for a little bit. Tell us about yourself and Planet Paranormal and what you do and how long you've been doing it.
All right, well, I was with another investigative team and years ago and heard that Planet Paranormal was coming up for sale. Mm-hmm. And so decided that rather than let the company go, I didn't realize I had that on, sorry. decided that rather than let the company fall by the wayside, because it was such an established name that I talked to some of my teammates and, you know, we all agreed that we'd give it a go to try to keep the site up and running. So we purchased Planet Paranormal Radio.
Uh-huh.
And then it was just kind of a natural progression to change the name of our team over to you know, Planet Paranormal Investigations, and just encompass everything we do under one roof.
That's
and
right.
So it's been going real well. We've just added a whole bunch of new shows. We've got approximately 10 shows coming online just in the next couple of weeks here.
Oh, great.
So we're real excited about that. Yeah, and the investigation team is doing some, you know, some exciting stuff and has done some exciting stuff. So
now you're supposed to be investigating Peter James' old house in the
future. Yeah, we put that off for a little while because there was, you know, they had moved some stuff out of storage into the condo.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of restrictive for space reasons, and so we didn't want to impose too much on, you know, the gentleman that owns the house now. So we put it off temporarily, but we still plan to go out there and do it when we get some more room cleared out where we can move around a little better and stuff.
That should be really good, really exciting. Now, other than the Queen Mary, what are some other places you've investigated?
Oh, we've done Alcatraz, which was another, you know, real fun location that we got some good stuff. You know, we have done the Banta Inn. We do a lot of home cases, you know, pretty much, you know, all the regular haunts and, you know, and then we'd like to, you know, try to get into people's residence and help them out if we can as well.
Uh-huh.
So.
All right. Now tell us a bit more about your time on the Queen Mary.
That's been pretty extensive. So,
how many times have you investigated there?
You know, I couldn't even hazard a guess as to how many times. There was a period of time over about 2 years that we were there actually, you know, at least once a week almost, you know, every week.
Oh, no kidding.
Throughout the year. So the Jackie audio that Brian Kloon, who's the team historian, and I were fortunate enough to capture in there over the Darkness Radio retreat in December.
Mm-hmm.
That was an extended conversation with Jackie, but it's not the first one that I've got. And over the past, you know, course of last 5 years or something, I, you know, have been talking to Jackie off and on. Actually, the first time I ever even tried to contact her, she had a conversation with me. But there were so many people in there, it was funny, most of them couldn't even make out that she was talking. The only people that seemed to be really aware of what was going on were the people that were standing right next to me, and they could actually hear her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get it recorded, but like I said, there's so much background chatter that, you know, I don't really play it for anybody because, you know, unless you know right when she's supposed to say it, you could say, oh, it's somebody else. But, I mean, after talking to her as many times as I have, you get to where you know the voice. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure Peter knew her voice as well, and he could, you know, pick her out in a crowded room. It's the same way.
Is she down in the pool area? Is that where you get those?
She goes. She wanders around, but generally in the pool area is the place where you get, you know, the best activity. Although I have picked her up pretty loudly in the boiler room, which, you know, a lot of people say, well, why is she in the boiler room? But the boiler room is actually directly below the pool.
Oh, is it?
So, yeah. So every once in a while you'll hear her down in the boiler room singing and, you know, giggling or, you know, screeching or, you know, making some other kind of noise. One time I actually was down in the boiler room with Rod Shelton from Hauntings Radio.
Uh-huh.
And we were down there, just the two of us, and you could hear her singing with what seemed to be an older spirit, female spirit. you know, maybe possibly teenage to, you know, early 20s, somewhere in there.
Right.
And it's really interesting to walk in and, you know, and hear, you know, a little girl and this other ghost singing.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, have you ever, you've caught quite a few, you know, audio recordings. Have you caught anything on video or camera in there?
Haven't caught anything that I'm aware of, you know, I mean, and to be honest with you, we've got so many hours and hours of tape that I've got tape that we haven't even reviewed yet. I've probably got 150 tapes of the Queen Mary that we haven't even gone over yet because it's just, you know, almost impossible. It's, you know, we keep trying to have dates where we can all get together and just go through this stuff. And we knock off, you know, like five of them at a time or something, but it still doesn't make much of a dent. You know? So, but to the best of my knowledge, we haven't got anything that's just like an aha, you know, type of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I mean, I do see Jackie, you know, periodically. You can see little shadows running around. You can even hear us talking about it on the audio. I don't know if you'll hear it. I shortened up the clips because last time I was on, it was a pretty long clip, and it gets kind of confused as to what's going on unless you play from start to finish the whole clip,
right,
which is extremely long for a radio show. So I cut it down to the more pertinent clips, you know, where you could really hear loud and clear. But you could hear and see Jackie running around. You could hear, like, if she'd get frustrated, you could actually hear what sounded like her stomping her feet.
No kidding.
You'd see a little shadow go by, and you'd hear me say something, and a few seconds later, you'd hear Brian say something about it. He'd be like, you know, there's a shadow over there, and I'd be like, yeah, well, you know. You could tell from the progression of how we were talking, you know, that she was moving, you know, it was moving accordingly, you know. So it was kind of interesting. She was really active that night. And,
That's really interesting. I want to play these clips for the listeners. The first one I was going to play was the one Peter caught. When was that captured, the audio clip?
That was in 1991 when, that was for sightings, but it was actually before sightings where Peter was actually putting together a demo for the program sightings because it was just that new. So what you are seeing in the video and what you're hearing right now, if you go to the MySpace, you can see the video, but you certainly hear Jackie vocalizing as he expresses as well. She's the most cognizant and vocal of any entity that he's aware of that's able to kind of transfer beyond just EVP and really be a demonstrative, just a presence that can really vocalize as she does. And she has quite a bit of an exchange with him, as she does with Bob and his evidence nearly 20 years later. So that is 1991 for something that it was just Peter, a videographer that he had, and two appointed Queen Mary security guards that were on point, mm-hmm, and visibly shaken too, as he described. So,
okay. You listeners might want to turn the sound up a little bit. I'm going to play this clip. It's about 2 minutes. Then we'll come back, and then we'll talk to Bob, and we'll play his two clips. So here it is right here.
I believe she had her tragic accident. When we did go into the first-class swimming pool with my videographer and their appointed security guard, Jackie began to speak audibly, verbally, where you can hear him, and I can hear him, and the whole world was able to hear her speak verbally, audibly. Yes, here. Come hold my hand now, Jackie. Let me help you. Okay, talk to me again. I don't want to go away unless you can help me here with love. I'm here to help you. Yes, you can find your mommy too. Your mommy loves you like we do. We're here with love and light for you. Talk to me.
That's amazing.
Right.
Yeah, that's what drew me into to being such a big fan of Peter's. I was just blown away when I first heard that, as I think anybody would be.
Yeah, no kidding.
Likewise.
Now, Bob, you caught pretty much the same thing, like John said, almost 20 years later.
Yeah, we did. Brian and I were in there. It was just us two. And this last time, and it was just, pretty much the same thing. She was maybe not quite as loud as when Peter was talking to her, but she was still very loud. And it was quite an experience. Who would have thought that, you know, back in the 90s when, you know, Peter caught this and I was all, you know, enthralled watching this on sightings, that someday I'd have that same experience. I could have never imagined it. So, you know, I always tease everybody that I'm about as psychic as a doorknob. You know, it's funny. Everybody keeps telling me I'm psychic, and I keep rejecting that totally. But they keep telling me, so I don't get it, you know. I don't see them, like, standing in front of me, at least not usually. I mean, there's been the rare instance where I have seen a ghost standing in front of me, but, you know, it's, I think it's, it, when that's happened, other people that were next to me could see it too. So, you know, it's not like it was something exclusive to me or anything.
And right.
The only thing I've noticed is that they do, you know, where I go, ghosts tend to be more audible, and I'm not sure why that is.
Huh.
You know, but they, I can go into locations that sometimes there's not audible activity, and they'll you know, chime in, you know, and start talking out loud or making some other audible noise. So I actually have a lot more audible recordings than I do EVPs and stuff. I have a lot of EVPs as well, but you know, I pride myself on having a lot of audible talking.
Well, there's one thing I notice about when you just communicate, and it's similar to Peter's, in that, like, you know, where you're communicating with Jackie, it's more like, I mean, as a child, it's, you know, they're, you know, typically shy, and she does communicate with you. She just starts answering you like she would Peter, where it's in the approach. It's nothing confrontational. It's something more like a parent talking to a child, and you have that sort of demeanor that I think she responds to.
Do you think it's her age that's the reason why she's more open?
It very well might be. I have had, you know, it's funny, as I look back on my life, kids do tend to take to me for some reason. So, you know, that may be part of it. I always, you know, with the Jackie thing, I thought, well, maybe it's just my big mustache might be the deciding factor between Peter and I.
It could be.
I've got that going on, and starting to turn gray now as well. So,
well, I got the Peter mustache going on my chat room here too, with the Flanders going. So,
yeah, representing
in my
that.
Own way, I'm rocking the mustache like Peter did. You know what I mean?
I was wondering about that.
Well, let's play your two clips, Bob. I'm going to play them back to back, and they're the louder ones that you had sent me. So,
okay, then those are actually the Brian Clune recordings. Those are recorded by my teammate then.
Okay.
He was standing about maybe 8 feet away from me, and he was using, if I'm not mistaken, a Panasonic recorder, and I was using a little Sansa MP3 player, of all things. It gets real clear recordings. It's not a lot of static, but it also doesn't pick up as loudly, whereas Brian's has more static, but it picks up a little bit more, you know, it comes through louder.
Right. All right.
Right. As I gotta point out as well too, I mean, this is on two separate recorders in the same pool area. There's Bob's and Brian's, and these are two different recorders you pick up, Jackie.
Right.
Yeah, I can even play all four of them, you know, so you can hear the difference. I know yours, like you said, Bob, are a lot quieter, but you still can hear it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I'll play Brian's here. So if you want to turn up your audio. Here's the first one.
You can call me Colonel. What's wrong, buddy? Are you okay with me? Yeah.
You can definitely tell it's the same little girl, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, I had, when that was happening, my hair was standing up everywhere. It was really strange.
I can imagine mine standing up right now. So
Right. Try being there, and you know, and you can see her little shadow cruising around, and you know, and to be honest with you, you know, I was really nervous about going to sleep that night because I did kind of seem to irritate her when I asked her to call me, come see her Uncle Bob. She was very adamant that I was not her uncle, and I was afraid I was going to wake up in the middle of the night with her screaming at me.
Yeah, that's what it took to elicit the response, too. It was sort of like that type of exchange, you know, that she felt comfortable enough with you to let you know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that wasn't my intent. My intent was, you know, I thought, well, you know, dang near everybody has an Uncle Bob, you know, and, you know, I mean, I must be Uncle Bob to, you know, eight kids, you know, so I just needed to add another one on there, and but she wasn't having any part of that, so.
Well, let's play yours that you recorded at the same time on your audio device.
Sure.
Okay, here we go.
Can you come down closer? If I've ever heard you, honey, I'm so happy.
They're a little quick, but
actually, that I didn't hear it at all because I think there's like a bumping that occurred every time she was supposed to speak. So I don't know what that was.
Huh.
It seemed to actually cut out on this end. Did you hear it, John?
No, I didn't hear it. I heard the same bumping you did, but yeah, that's at that one point where she does do an exchange with you.
All right, let me try it again. Maybe it was because I mute my mic. So, play them one more time here.
Come down closer. If I've ever heard you, honey, I'm so happy.
Did you hear him that time?
No, you know, I don't know what. It's weird. It's like it's almost like it cuts out right in the important parts.
Huh. That's strange. We had that last time you sent those to me. They didn't play completely or something. I can't remember what happened.
Yeah, that's odd.
Do we know anything about Jackie? Has there been any research done on her?
John? Yeah, I'm not aware of... Yeah, I know... I think Tommy D, he might have something that he found or through records or archives. But yeah, I don't know of a specific story of a girl that drowned in a swimming pool. But as Peter describes... And back in 91, which they never showed in sightings, was he was in the Royal Theater when he first communicated with her. And it was a surprise to Peter as well that, you know, she kept talking about meeting him in the other pool area, and he was in a theater. So that didn't make a lot of sense to him. But then he found out later through a ship historian that at one time the Royal Theater was a second-class swimming pool. So that's where Jackie seems to travel as well, is between the two portions of the ship that she believes are two different pool areas even to this day. So where she was trying to bring Peter into the first class swimming pool, which she seemed to like the most, there was this other second class swimming pool that he believes that she actually drowned in. So again, the records, there are some that even when you see the plaques on the Queen Mary, mm-hmm. that list certain deaths, and there's burials at sea, and there's no names given, and there's stowaways, and all these different factors that there's a lot of deaths that occur that aren't explained or really, you know, documented in any type of record. So she could have fallen under that category.
Huh. All right. I'm just Bob sending me another file here that will play in just a minute when we get it. I understand we've got a mutual acquaintance, Mike Loop.
Right.
Yeah,
Mike.
Yeah, he was one of the first people on our show, and in fact, he's coming on in a couple weeks again. But did you guys meet up recently, or did you just speak?
Yeah, I got an email actually from SJ that he corresponded to her that, you know, we just met, and he was interested in getting a copy of the book autographed and actually on the ship. So I don't live too far from the Queen Mary. I live like four miles south of it. So I went down there one night, and after, you know, tucking our daughter into bed, and just went down there and met with Mike, and he had a friend with him, Caesar, that was instrumental in getting us to different parts of the ship, as there were other workers there, and can we just go in there just to this area and just kind of call out to Jackie, and they were cooperative and said, yeah, sure, just, you know, don't fall, don't, you know, stub a toe or anything. So we went in there and called out to Jackie several times, and, you know, I signed the book for him right there in the pool area. That was the first time I ever did that, and that was just an honor for me as well to do that for a great fan of Peter's. And there were two different occasions. We were there quite a while, but there were two different occasions where you felt like you caught a partial of a sentence, and then we all kind of looked at each other at the same time, like, did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely that same voice, as Bob describes too, that it's a voice that's very distinct. You can almost...
Yeah.
pick her out in a crowd, you know, as he states too, that, it's that same distinct voice that you recognize from Peter's audio from 1991, from Bob's audio, and just when you're there and you hear it, I mean, it just really sticks out in your mind. That's that same little girl. So, yeah, well, you know, I met with Mike, and he's a great guy, and just a huge super fan of Peter's work as well.
Yeah,
and
sure
I know
is.
SJ and you had had him on the show, too, originally as, like, one of the first guests.
Right, yeah. Now, can you get, if you're listening, Mike, hi, and look forward to having you on the show. I think he's... planned on listening today from Anaheim, so
I sent out an invite. He should know that the show's going on too. So
yeah, I'm sure he's probably listening. So, can you still get on the Queen Mary to do investigations, or is it closed for paranormal investigations?
It's that's more
it's
of a question
tight.
For Bob. Oh, go ahead.
It's a little tight right now. Actually, you know, you can go on to do like tours with the. Queen Mary itself, you know, they offer like a ghost hunting tour,
right.
You know, but to actually, if you're an established group, it's, you know, a little bit tougher. We're working on, you know, trying to get that opened up a little bit more right now. You know, we'll just have to, you know, keep our fingers crossed and see if we can, you know, maybe make some headway with it. But right now, it's really difficult.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it new owners or something? Is that why that
it's you know, it's... Yeah, it keeps switching owners, and actually I heard that they're, you know, changing their lease again. I'm not sure, you know, if that's exactly right or not, but, you know, it seems like, you know, the last owners that had the ship, they would, you know, if you were there and if you were, you know, being mindful and if you just nicely asked security, they would let you into these areas, you know, and they would kind of hang back and, you know, let you do your thing, and they were, you know, pretty cool about it, and which made it really nice. And then when the new management took over, they started cracking down a lot more where, you know, it's a lot tougher to get in. Although John just said that, you know, they let him go in there. So,
yeah,
you know,
I was wondering.
It may just depend on, you know, who you run into at the time.
Right.
Right. And also, too, if he didn't have his friend with him there, Caesar, that spoke Spanish, we wouldn't have been able to even do that. So there was a certain point like, okay, can we just stand here and just call out for Jackie and just be in this one area? And, you know, it's really not up to ship personnel that are on staff that late at night to really make those decisions. But ultimately, I understand it. The ship is actually 120 yards longer than the Titanic was, and so it's a large area, a lot of liability issues, especially for the state of California, which
sure.
is, you know, rampant for lawsuits and that type of thing. So it's not something that there's dark areas. I understand it from an ownership standpoint or certainly from a liability standpoint, but it can be a lot friendlier, I think, for that untapped source of paranormal groups and certainly an interest in being, as Peter describes, the most actively haunted location in the world.
Right. Oh, it's time for another break here. We're talking to John Temporelli, co-author of Heaven Can You Hear Me with Peter James, and we're talking with Bob Davis from Planet Paranormal. All you listeners, if you have any questions, we're in the chat room, so feel free to ask, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes, so don't go away.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know, I've had a drink problem and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
For the latest news in the paranormal world, listen to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio live on Para X every Friday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. London time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern.
This is the Para X Radio Network.
When a child is abducted, every second counts. That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community
and this station. Join the Soul Seekers live every Friday night from 9 to 11 p.m. London time, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time for paranormal discussions with special guests from around the world, right here on Para-X Radio.
Hi, we're back, everybody. Welcome to Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio. I'm Gil, your host, and we're speaking with John Temporilli and Bob Davis from Planet Paranormal. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, Gil.
Thanks for coming on again. Like I said before, sorry we had technical difficulties that first show, but they're all ironed out and things seem to be running smoothly. We're also
definitely as Peter's family and best friends and his former personal staff. Thanks for having me on just to promote his book as well.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And tonight we're also broadcasting live on the secondary ParaX International server, which they just started up. And they'll be broadcasting paranormal shows in native languages. I know there's a Mexican group that's coming on speaking in Spanish, and we've got maybe possibly an Indian that's going to be speaking from India. So tonight we're just testing that out, too, and it seems to be running very well. So let's get back to you, John. I've got some more questions about Peter. You mentioned earlier that he helped solve crimes. Or a crime?
Right, yeah, he did it. There's a dedicated chapter, too, on one specific case, particularly because it simply involved a friend of his, one of his videographers, that he just saw one of his new places, went through on a tour, and just happened to be in the bathroom area and said, well, there's a girl in the shower, you know, and she's standing there, and she gave him information, specific information about a murder and certain circumstances regarding her death. And so what he did was become involved in a police murder case in which he started talking to a detective, and it was involving a murder that was not so recent from the time he had the first confrontation with her and just, you know, first conversation and everything. And so he just simply started helping police at that point with his psychic ability, and ultimately in that case it led into the incarceration of the murderer, which was a boyfriend of hers, and that's where it really started turning the tides for his involvement with law enforcement. The person that in question, that was a detective in the chapter, really had a great deal of skepticism towards psychics, so it sort of goes over that as well, sort of the barriers that he faces, and I'm sure other psychics face as well, in dealing with law enforcement and getting them to sort of, you know, agree with what you're telling them.
Sure.
To a skeptical mind.
Right. Yeah, a lot of them would just think you're nuts.
Right.
We've got a good...
Right, so...
We've got a good friend here, Angela McGee, and she was on the A&E series, Psychic Investigators. And she,
oh, great.
Yeah, she's she helps a lot of the police enforcement agencies over here in England solve crimes, and she's been very successful. But, you know, she's not your stereotypical medium nowadays, you know, that stands in front of a crowd and says, I'm getting a message from Uncle Joe and things like that. But she primarily focuses on helping solve crimes, and it's got a very high success rate. What would you consider this book, or do you consider this book to be Peter's legacy?
Yes, as stated before, it was something that was a very prominent theme throughout the evening and in just that one and final meeting with Peter regarding his wishes for the book and who he intended the book and ultimately royalties and everything for the family and the entire breakdown. He was very specific in his wishes for the book and that it was truly a legacy for him, and that it was something that was meant to bridge sort of a gap or bring a new amount of understanding between who we are as the living and his friends that he has lived with his whole life that are in the afterlife, and that he wanted to dispel a lot of myths because simply they are his friends, and as he stated too, and it's mentioned in the preface of the book as well as from his understanding to me, is that he would just no more want anything other than if he could just have one child sleep well at night, just knowing what he believed and what he truly knows is his involvement with the afterlife and what it truly entails. He wanted to dispel the myth that these are not, and I described it to him, and he agreed with it. I said, so you're sort of like the crocodile hunter, and that you're holding up this, you know, warded, hissing, you know, creature and saying, isn't she gorgeous? I mean, we don't understand his world. We don't understand what he's lived with and
right.
dealt with and evolved with as far as communication and all the different standards that he sort of put out there that we've kind of accepted now through his programming and sort of picked up on as just regular people without any type of gift, we pick up on what he's achieved, just, you know, any type of reasoning that we can apply to it, we've seen him actually in application with the spirit world and have kind of picked that up as a standard. So I do believe this is his legacy. I do believe it is a great field guide or source, if you will, for future paranormal investigators, that you do not have to demand things and be confrontational, but simply to just, rule number one, as Peter states, is communication. Communication is the first key in dealing with the afterlife.
Interesting. Now, what all does the book cover?
Well, it covers various aspects of what Peter knows, first off, too, that spirits and ghosts are territorial. If you were sitting on your couch in your living room and someone just came in and sat right on your lap, you'd have some type of reaction. So Peter goes over every aspect of what he has. The last chapter is communicating with the spirit realm, and that's simply a walkthrough of what he does outside before he even enters a location, of what you should probably feel, go through, start a communication, a dialogue with, do your history, you know, just research on who possibly died there and what state they died in, and you know, proceed accordingly. Basically, is what Peter describes in that area of the chapter, and then others go over his various investigations of the Queen Mary, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, and you know, other aspects that led to a rise in fame in his career and a notoriety. But ultimately, too, you know, his basic beliefs of what is truly out there as an afterlife. Maybe not necessarily pearly gates that are up there in the clouds, that he believes that there is a life source energy or an energy field, that an energy plane that exists right here on Earth. So he explores all those different aspects or theories, because he deals with speaking and communicating with ghosts and entities and carrying out some of those certain messages that they want to get to family members, or when it comes to help aiding law enforcement in an unsolved crime.
Right.
He deals with all those aspects on what the afterlife may be, what he was traditionally trained to believe and educated with, and you know, certainly certain things that we need to all raise questions about, not, you know, be more open-minded, not just accept certain archaic beliefs and ideals that are passed on by one man to another man, and certainly just be open-minded, and you know, just, it's all there in his words. So
how did Peter define a ghost or a haunting?
He would define a ghost or haunting in various ways. I mean, there's certainly the ones that are communicating directly with you. There's some things that he felt vibrationally. That's something that I never really knew about or really thought about, you know, as just somebody that kind of dabbles into, you know, just watching certain paranormal cable programming or reading certain books, that you really focus on that as being, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
When you see other psychics, and that you think, well, do they have an ability, do they not? And you can't really gauge that. But when he offers that explanation, that sometimes he doesn't know why he's telling you this, and that he's not 100% on it, and sometimes it's just, as he explains, reluctant to provide you with that information, simply because this is a form that he was given information by, just simply a vibrational, as he calls it, feeling.
Uh-huh.
And so he's giving you, your cousin or your grandmother in Iowa wants you to know that you need to sell the family farm because it's really hurting the kids, and that's coming from the grandfather that passed away. He doesn't know why he's telling you this, but you have to know this, and in all cases, it turned out to be the actual thing that meant something to somebody, but he didn't feel comfortable necessarily with where the source of the information or what it meant, because
right.
That's a different sort of expression. So he explores various ways of how this information needs to get to people, or what to actually do with it as a person, you know, was very conflicting for him as well.
Huh. Now, a lot of psychics or mediums have spirit guides. Did Peter have a spirit guide that, you know, gave him information or guided him?
Yeah, he never really mentioned anything of that type or have, you know, some other type of celestial person, you know, giving or providing certain information. Mm-hmm. But he did communicate with spirits and from an early age, and they were different ghosts or people that passed or met an untimely or a tragic ending. That's who he communicated with. There wasn't necessarily some type of spiritual mentor or somebody that was on the other side that, you know, gave him information or pass certain things on to him. But he does describe in a certain chapter of the book, and that's something I want to explore with his former personal assistant and his best friend, mm-hmm. Is that he does mention that there was a certain ghost that he was really developing sort of a dialogue with, that he was really exploring and was videotaped with, just communicating with and getting that dialogue together to really explore certain facets of the afterlife.
I see. What did he believe happened to us when we die?
He believes 99.9% of who he talks to and communicates with was someone that died untimely or tragically. Uh-huh. The reason is he can't talk to everyone is because they do go to another aspect of the afterlife. What it is, he admittedly says, I'm not sure what that is. It could be everything that religion has led you to believe, and it's completely out there, and that's what the afterlife presents, yet explores the idea that you know, no one has ever died and come back from those places to explain what those are. So these are man-made interpretations.
Sure.
You know, look at him that way if you choose to, but he does not in any way wish to, denounce any religious belief or expression. But what he believes is that it's something that he can still feel. He can still understand that there's this vibrational sense to him that it's not off in the clouds, that he is aware of this presence of an afterlife beyond who he communicates with that die tragically and untimely, which are those 99% of the people that he does experience and communicate with,
right.
That there is an afterlife, but he believes it's an energy sort of plane that's right here on Earth.
I see. A lot of people you hear, you know, were visited by Aunt Sally or whoever, or that, you know, that a parent's passed over and they want to look over their children. Did he ever refer to anything like that?
Right. Well, actually, his brother told me a story, and you know, I'm just going to pass that along as well. And it's sort of along the lines of that same example. But he was talking about one time in particular, and he grew up without a gift, and just was always blown away by you know, Peter's understanding of the afterlife and what he expressed to him as well. But he first brought over, you know, his now wife that Peter married, you know, back in the early '80s, and so his brother Tommy told me a story that when he first brought his wife, his now wife, over when they were first dating, Peter just started saying to her, "I don't know why I need to tell you this, but your aunt or your, you know, great grandmother Rose says that the kids need to sell the general store in, you know, Akron, Ohio, or something like that,
right.
And that you know, your grandfather feels that's as important too." And then sure enough, she started crying, and then, you know, Tommy, his brother, had to go in and kind of console his wife and everything. And I really think that'd be a great amendment to something else, too, is another book that's all the personal stories and a compilation of everybody that knew Peter as well. And that's, you know, unfortunately not a part of this book. I kept to the wishes and everything of Peter and didn't want to expand outside of that. So, I mean, that could be something in the future. But at the same time, that was a personal story that his brother shared with me regarding Peter, uh-huh. and his abilities, that, you know, it really meant something to, you know, his girlfriend at the time, that's, you know, now his wife, that,
right.
that was a very real thing that Peter just said, "I don't know, I've never met you, but I have to tell you this," and it really meant something, and sure enough, the kids got rid of that general farm that was costing them all kinds of money. And, you know, it was a money pit that was handed down, but they didn't feel they needed to hold on to it for some type of family remembrance, that the family members wanted to convey that message and could feel that Peter was somehow a conduit that was able to do that for them. And that's really what Peter expresses as well, is that that's the other aspect of the afterlife that he talks with the most, is they have messages. They really want him to that really need carried out is part of that 90% of or 99% of who he speaks with. They don't necessarily die tragically or untimely, but they want a message carried out. And there's other people in other forums, as he mentions, that have that grandmother or the mother that visited them in a dream or let them know everything was going to be all right, and then they wake up the next day to find out that person passed away. So he says there's definitely a point where your family members do check in with you from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that Peter realized as well.
Huh. And what were his thoughts about demons and, you know, being possessed?
Yeah, he's had several correspondences or people contact him as he explores in certain chapters on possession or other facets of other chapters as well in his book. And really, he's never seen a demon. He's never seen a gargoyle. He's had people call him out to their homes that have, you know, look, there's the gargoyle at the top of the, you know, telephone pole in my backyard and that kind of thing. So he's been in places with, you know, shamans or priests and to sort of cleanse a home, or as they look at it, really he's there for communicational reasons or to help that spirit, move on into the afterlife when providing certain information. But while they're talking about the demon in the one corner of the room, he's looking in the same corner of the room saying, I don't see it. It's not there, but I see the ghost in the other corner of the room, which is why we're here and who I'm talking to. But I don't see this, you know, 4-foot gargoyle running around on the floor. So he's never had an experience with a demon or something negative that's some kind of, something from the underworld or anything like that. He's never had anything of that type. So that's something he explores as well as, you know, if we're going to get our kids to sleep well at night and do that type of thing, I'm letting you know what I know.
Right.
He's certainly open-minded. If there's somebody that can prove to him that there was a gargoyle or something else or something demonic, he's open to that idea. He's just never seen it. So that's simply what he goes by.
I gotcha. What about, using holy water and burning sage and, you know, all the rituals that some people do to get rid of ghostly activity? Did he believe
right.
in that?
Right, no, that's in the book as well, that, yeah, sage, holy, you know, burning of sage and holy water, and and crucifixes. He's been on investigations with people that have, you know, had that, provided that, but he's never, ever, as he describes, ever gone in with holy water or burning sage or any other type of instruments, you know, any other forms of instruments as well, you know, just if it's just EVP monitors or anything else. He's able to go into an environment and not utilize any type of instruments or, you know, feel that there's the need for protective measures. So that's explored in the book as well, but he just feels he's never needed it. Communications is number one form of just any method in approaching any type of a haunted activity. And he doesn't say that you shouldn't use it. If you feel that there's a protective measure or a reason for that, or if you feel that it helps move a spirit on to the other side, you know, certainly go ahead and feel free to do so. He wants to eliminate some of the combative techniques that are out there to sort of yell and, you know, UMF or get, you know, all that kind of stuff. He doesn't want that to be, you know, a standard. So he's trying to, you know, basically make something as basic as possible to a technique or an approach in dealing with haunted activity. And he's never had that. He's never, ever used crucifixes or holy water when dealing with the realm of the afterlife that he deals with, which is actually people that died tragically or untimely. He knows that they are territorial, that they're confused by their transition and death, and that something could seem combative or out of place to someone that, say, if it's a Native American spirit and you're running at them with a cross and throwing water at them, you know, he's saying that some of the generated activity could possibly be from that.
Sure.
So something that would not understand your religious ideals, or if, you know, say you went to China and ran, you know, they're not understanding English and you're running into a room, you know, full force. It's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, so.
All right. What kind of experiences did he go through when he, you know, would see or sense a ghost?
Yeah, again, different measures at different times, as he describes the vibrational aspect of where, you know, he would go over senses of uneasy feelings or sort of nausea or just something like an out of balance with the equilibrium,
right.
Or you know, sweating, you know, just different things that would let him know, okay, I'm in the presence of something. Within 5 minutes of walking into a location, mm-hmm. he describes, you know, within 5 minutes of him walking into a location, he can let you know if there's haunted activity. And so when he goes into a location, yeah, he'll get certain sensations that let him know that, okay, there is a presence here. You know, this person wasn't just kind of making something up. And then at that point, he'll start getting certain names or something. Again, vibrationally, he's not sure why he's telling you this name or who this person is or why this location of an area or a room, but something, I'm feeling something on the back of my neck, you know, as he describes, like in a, there's a video on the myspace.com/PeterJamesLives that I just added. And again, you know, as you know, I'm not great with computers, so it's actually on the homepage, and I couldn't get the video in the video section. So anyways, it's on the homepage, but it's of an Alcatraz investigation that sort of, you know, pinpoints that, where there's a warden that's in a sidebar interview that's like, before media or anything else, no one could have known what Peter James is experiencing right now, and that did actually happen. It was about not a prisoner that died tragically in this one part of the cell, but it was a guard.
Uh-huh.
And Peter describes, like, on the back of his neck, like, something, you know, happened here and in the back of my head, and it was where, you know, a guard was actually murdered in one of the cells. And so there's the certain part where Peter feels what is actually happening to the victim and who that person is and what's going through their mind. And in that part, he describes, I'm not usually in here. This is not where I am supposed to be, but something has happened to me and that kind of thing. And that's, you know, he's just conveying that message, but it means something to somebody else. But yeah, as far as what he feels, there's different levels of what it could be at certain places, or certainly dependent on what that activity level would have. If it was somebody that was violently aggressive in life, that's how they are in death. Or if it was someone that was just, you know, matronly and a kind, giving, sharing woman that died tragically, you know, he would let you know that, yeah, there's something there, I feel something uneasy, but it's not this overwhelming aggressive force that I need to, you know, sort of express to you. So.
I see. Now, he spent a lot of time helping people that, you know, thought their house was haunted, or other than just doing, you know, investigations, he spent a lot of his time with people that were troubled. Is that right?
Right, and that's another facet of Peter that I'd want to explain as well. That he wasn't one of those psychics or, you know, paranormal researchers with a, you know, jeweled cape and had the Bengal tigers out in the backyard and everything. He lived very simply and had a condo just here in Los Angeles area. But at the same time, yeah, he had people reach out to him. He never asked them for money or donations or anything. He simply wanted to help people and communicate across his ideas for the, you know, what is there in the afterlife, and really console somebody as much as possible so that they had an understanding based on his gift. And so that's what I saw set apart from Peter as well, is that he did a lot of just... When I emailed Peter, he emailed back, he corresponded with me, gave me his home number, everything. Mm-hmm. I could have been some, you know, freak for all he knew, but
sure.
He was like, you know, even as a former personal assistant says, Peter was never a great judge of character. Anybody reached out to him or needed advice or assistance, he grabbed his coat and he was out the door, or gave his phone number out and would talk hours on the phone, even though his breathing could be distressed because he had, you know, chronic bronchitis since childhood and asthmatic. And I mean, it was very apparent on his tours, but that never quelled Peter's beliefs and what he felt like he really needed to express to people. And that was the utilization of his gift to really help a person in a time of need, or if they were in a traumatic situation, or if a child was involved in a home with haunting activity, he was always available for that, never charged anybody a dime for any of it. So that was another aspect of Peter that sets him apart of so many other psychics in the world. So
yeah, he sounds like he was an amazing person.
Right.
We're speaking with John Tipperilli, co-author of Heaven Can You Hear Me, along with Peter James, and we didn't get to talk to you that half hour, Bob. Are you still there, or did you fall back asleep?
No, I'm still hanging in here.
When we come back after the break, Bob sent me another clip, and we'll play bits of that, and we'll talk to Bob some more about the Queen Mary and Peter James. We should be back in about 5 minutes, so don't go away. If you have any questions, feel free to ask in the chat room, and we'll be right back.
Broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
When a child is abducted, every second counts. That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet broadcasting community and this station.
right, we're back. Welcome to Soul Seekers Radio. I'm speaking with John Temporilli and Bob Davis. Hi, guys.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good. Still there?
Oh, yeah.
Let's,
I don't know. I don't know if John's still there, but I'm still here.
Well, since you're here, Bob, you have
I'm just unmuting the microphone. I forgot to push that button. Yeah, go ahead.
Technology and John don't get along.
Yeah.
So you sent me another clip, Bob, but it's quite a long one, and I can't seem to start about a quarter of the way through, I think you said.
Right.
If you want to try and maybe play some clips or lead into it, tell us what they are.
Yeah, I think I can try to replay those that you tried earlier, and hopefully you'll be able to hear them from this end.
Okay.
So the first one, let's see here, I'll try to play, is, it's one of the, it's an interesting thing about when we were there that night and we recorded that, Brian and I. When we first walked in and she first started talking, I was trying to kind of coax her, and there's this one part where she says, "You're not my uncle," really loud and enunciated.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was about a minute or more before I ever even verbalized, you know, come see your Uncle Bob. So that's, you know, one thing that's, you know, very curious about it is that she said it before I ever even spoke it.
Yeah,
so I've got, and then when I did speak it, I said, "Jackie, come see your Uncle Bob." And then again, she says, "You're not my uncle." And I said, "Well, you can call me your uncle." And she says, "No." And she yells it at me. So there's actually two sections here where it's, "You're not my uncle." And I unfortunately didn't label them, so I'll have to fill you in after I play it. But
okay.
Anyway, these are the Brian Clune recordings. So let me crank my volume up here real quick.
Okay.
And all right, here we go. Let me get it open. All right, here we go.
That's really
good.
Could
you hear that all right?
Yeah, I could hear that great.
Perfect.
That's incredible.
Okay, so that was actually the second one where she said that. So that was let's see if I can find the first one here. And this will be the one that, hopefully, with any luck at all, this will be the one that where she verbalized it before I actually said anything.
Okay.
So here we go.
Yeah, you just might want to mute the microphone when you do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, if I mute the microphone, that ain't gonna work.
We can't hear it.
I couldn't get it to turn on. I was trying to hold on.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear her there? The very first thing you hear is "You're not my uncle," like that. and that was long before I ever even said anything about it. I was just kind of thinking, maybe if I pull the Uncle Bob routine, that'll get her to come out, which it did. So.
Now, you have these clips on your website, don't you, that people can listen to?
Yeah, we do, and we have the extended version, so you can hear, like, the whole... You know, well, almost a whole. It was about 17 minutes. There's a couple of things that I cut out because of language.
Uh-huh.
Basically, you can hear about 15 minutes of mine and Brian's recording as well. And then you can also hear the original 1991 Peter James audio. You can go to parainvestigations.com and go to our evidence page, and you can listen to them at length there and, compare for yourself.
No, it's really great to hear it there, and it's just in its entirety, and then you really get the full effect when you have the entire conversation that you're hearing Jackie, and, you know, right there, kind of sounds like you're playing with, you know, making balloon animals and stuff, but, you know, it's really pronounced in the part where she's like, "You're not my uncle," and, you know, you couldn't really hear it in the clip, but it's very pronounced on Bob's site.
Yeah,
It didn't come across very well.
Yeah, it was that one part you can really hear her say, "No," you know, that kind of thing. But that part where, she's, "You're not my uncle." That really, you can really hear that, and you can really hear the ambience of the pool area, you know, the echoing, and really feel like you're there in the full extended version.
Right.
Now, notice on your site, Bob, that you don't use Ouija boards.
Generally not, no. you know, and that's more of a group decision. Now, the other night, it's funny you should mention that, because we actually did end up in the pool the other night with LifeSci, Tim from LifeSci TV, and I was fortunate enough to be asked to be on their show, and he broadcast live from the pool, and he was doing some ITC experiments there, and he actually did bring along a Ouija board, and I was like, "No, you're not pulling that thing out here." So luckily he didn't, but you know, actually had a real strange experience that I can relate to you there. That it was funny because, you know, I stayed pretty much out in the main pool area and was trying to communicate with Jackie, whereas they were doing the ITC experiment underneath the stair of the pool, which is still in the basic same general area, but it's a little bit more sealed off. And that's a place where this other spirit, Grumpy, I call him Grumpy. I'm not sure what his real name is, but he growls at you. And so he stays under the stairs a lot. And so they were doing these ITC experiments under the stairs. And Tim had come out to kind of catch his breath, and he was standing along one of the hallways that's alongside the pool, and he said that he saw this brown shadow run through the wall, and at the same time that he saw this shadow go through the wall, it looked like a car headlight coming right at him. It was like almost like a plasma ball.
Really?
And this thing was coming straight at him, and then he said it, at the last minute it kind of swerved and hit him in the shoulder and almost took him down, and I've never seen anybody on an investigation look more shook up than Tim did.
Really?
He said in his whole career he'd never had anything shock him like that. He said that when this thing hit him, he started hearing it. He said it, quote unquote, it sounded like the walls were starting to talk to him.
Wow.
And he said he felt all these rushes of different emotions and stuff, and he was shaken for several hours. I mean, to the point where he called the investigation and, you know, wanted to get out of there.
Okay.
And, which is obviously, you know, the right thing to do when you're feeling
sure.
like that.
Sure.
Now, I didn't see it. I wasn't in there at the time. I'd actually stepped out and went down to the boiler room with Brian to see if we could, you know, if there was any spirits down underneath the pool, if we could maybe force them to go back up to the top side. So we missed it. We came back, and when we came back, Tim was, you know, really shaken up. So, yeah, it was very strange.
We've got a question for you from Spooky. Hello, Spooky. Glad you could make it tonight. She wants to know, do you often find that spirits will answer before you ask the question?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. And, yeah, I, you know, with all the research we've been doing, and especially with all the audibles we get, but it also happens with EVPs as well, that, yeah, we definitely get a lot of that where they, you know, they answer your question before you're actually verbalize it. We've even got EVPs where I'm asking a spirit, you know, can you tell me your name? And you actually, when you play it back, you hear the spirit say her name, then you hear the question asked, then you hear our psychic say the name of the spirit. So you've got like a real interesting progression there of confirmation. So, yeah, that's very common. And I think that helps us to, you know, maybe goes a long way to proving some of this evidence that we're catching. I think that might be one of the things that really, you know, makes you have to stop and you know, take note.
Any theories why that happens? You think they read your mind before, just before you ask the question?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any, I don't think there's any space and time, you know. I don't think time's linear like we have it here.
Uh-huh.
I think it's kind of maybe just a, you know, they're it's just the time and space are all kind of one, you know, area, you know. So, yeah, I don't think they're actually reading it before. I just think they already know it.
Right. There's the one point I just, you know, relayed back to a Spooky was that, you know, Peter James describes in the book that they do not communicate or move or have the same fluidity of speech that they do in life. So that's why when he gets certain names, or, you know, when you hear EVPs, that there's a drawl, or, you know, the voice is carried out, or because there's not the same fluidity of speech as he describes it as well. And from what he knows from certain EVPs, that's certainly the case, that's what he hears. Sometimes it's in that fashion. Other times it's as clear as just you and I speaking, that there is a lag in communication, or there could be, like you're saying, Bob, that there's a progression that they're a little bit, ahead of time as well.
Huh. Spooky's a good friend of ours. She's a medium also, and she just put up in the chat room that she records her readings that she gives to people, and that there's loads of voices that aren't hers or the person getting the reading that come through on the CDs that she makes for them. And she also gets...
That sounds a lot like what Bob's describing.
Yeah. And she gets to speak with the spirits, obviously, before she asks the questions. And being a medium, that's possible. I'm in no way a psychic at all or think have any psychic ability. So it's just, it blows my mind, really, to think that something like that would happen.
Yeah, I'd probably be dangerous if I had that ability. So I'm happy where I'm at.
Yeah, same here. I don't know if I can handle hearing all the voices.
No, I've never had any psychic ability either, or have seen any ghosts. It really was just seeing Peter on sightings that, for my wife and I, who in the same right, respect, had never had any psychic ability. So it's truly for people that are looking for that belief, or just anything that they're, after a loss, that, something, you need some kind of closure to afterlife. I mean, Peter certainly just brought that to the table for us.
Now, did Peter help other psychics develop?
He describes in the book how he had some people that wanted, would do investigations or help him in, other aspects of maybe even production on investigations, that he always preferred to work alone, but he did take certain people under his wing to help out, but they would in turn along the way feel like some of Peter rubbed off on them, and then he described that to me too in his former personal assistant, that a lot of people started developing psychic gifts just from being around Peter, but he doesn't feel that it works that way, but there's certainly tools and techniques. He gave workshops aboard the Queen Mary at one time. Mm-hmm. And you can't just transfer that ability onto somebody else through an apprenticeship. He had other people that came to him with attaché cases full of holy water, the sage, incense, and Bibles and everything. And, he in exploring his different techniques, methods, and what he's experienced through a lifetime, he helped other people realize, oh, okay, it's not that easy. It's not something you just develop. It's ultimately just communication, being open-minded, and going into something with your eyes open, as he describes it too. He found that if he closed his eyes and meditated, he missed a lot of the true communication or what was around him. Mm-hmm. That if he really went in with communication with eyes open, he would really truly get the full experience of what was intended and or the message that the entity needed to get across.
I see. Now,
that seems to, if I could interject for a second,
sure.
That seems to be kind of the case that, with what I've been recently discovering is, I used to go in loaded down with tons of equipment, and the most modern of everything. And, and I started realizing that the more I load myself down, the less happens around me. And that was the actual first, that when I caught the Jackie audio with Brian, mm-hmm. That was the first conscious effort I'd made to where I was like, I said, I'm going to leave all this crud behind, and I'm just taking my recorder and my 35mm camera, and that's it, my little digital camera. And that was it. And in fact, that's why we didn't have a video camera with us. And went in, and sure enough, she just piped right up, so... now I don't take anything really with me that much other than my audio recorder and a camera and now a video camera, of course.
Yeah.
And I seem to have a lot better results that way.
Well, they say the best piece of equipment to use is yourself.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
If you're not out to prove to the world, that ghosts exist and, carry all that equipment and everything, it's just...
Right. Peter describes, too, in the book as well, that in certain active locations, you have people that, you know, it's a family involved. Their lives have been disrupted. They have sleepless nights. And now you have a team coming in. They set up equipment. They find something later, 4 days later in post or something. He can tell within 4 minutes or 5 minutes of walking into a location if there's actual activity, discuss and have an active dialogue with you know, the active presence. And then, you know, it's, but there's something to that too with, you know, we need that as a society and people, where Peter agrees too ultimately that, you know, even there's paranormal teams that I wouldn't understand that. My wife wouldn't understand that, say, for example. We need to hear things, see things, and have a collective measure of evidence and really know that, you know, there's an afterlife. You know, for just regular lay people approaching this, where Peter had a psychic ability, I understand that. You can go into something and have an awareness, and you understand there's an afterlife, and that's who you're talking to. But other people need that evidence and just really need that, you know, supportive measure that there's something out there for all of us.
Right. What, for people that think their home is paranormally active, what would Peter like those people to know?
First thing, communication is what he spells out. Just, you know, speak with them. If you can, go in, find out as much about the history of the home or location that you're in, you know, if your family is involved. Just a really, if you can have a dialogue with not just yelling out, you know, or giving a nickname to something, but have a name that you're dealing with in the location. There are ways that he expresses that you can have them move along, certainly, but you can also at the same time coexist with them, but as he says, on your own terms. Right. If you have to be direct, and if you have to really spell things out, you don't need to yell and do a lot of the things that you see today on shows, but if you're direct and you let them know that this is your house or your, you know, any, this is your location, you know, just be firm, be direct, and have that type of dialogue if this is something you're actively dealing with in your own residence.
I see. And was there a final message that Peter wanted everyone to know?
Yeah, also, too, you know, that pretty much sums up the also the, you know, the very end of what he would say in the book, as well as communication. And he even gives a formula as well that's more like, you know, he describes it like an ice cream, where it's, you know, an ice cream with the chocolate layer would be this and the cherry on top would be that. But ultimately, the communication, realizing that these are human beings just like you and me, and if we talk to each other accordingly, we can coexist and have, you know, just, you know, actual, yeah, coexistence with the afterlife that,
right.
You know, a lot of us have been brought up archaically to believe that, you know, that's, you know, demonic or all these other facets that, you know, if you break it down to the most simplest form, it's communication with another human being, not necessarily one that you can see, but an existence where you can exist with an entity in the afterlife or help them move on if they are that confused. And to look at it that way. And right. So he's just basically saying, talk to him with love. You know, as you hear him when he's talking to Jackie and he, you know, wants her to, you know, hey, your mommy's here. She wants to talk to you. Or I'm going to help you find your mommy. You know, I'm here with love. That's how he communicates. So that was something I know is different as well.
Well, I encourage everybody to get the book, Heaven, Can You Hear Me? And John, I'll let you give the websites again where they can get the book and your MySpace and all that information.
Right. Okay. First off, yeah, it's myspace.com/PeterJamesLives. You can get the book there. I also offer the book autographed there as well under the book cover price. And two, as announced, that the publishing CEO wants to move forward and really get the book into stores. And to do that, you have to offer a great discount. So it's 45% off. That'll be at Amazon.com. I'm not sure if they're able to do that with Barnes & Noble yet, but it is offered on BarnesandNoble.com. If people here in the States or anywhere have the Reader's Advantage card that they can apply to that. And so, yeah, Amazon.com, Amazon UK, Amazon Germany, Amazon France, Amazon Australia, BarnesandNoble.com, the MySpace, and as well, you know, for to really sit and enjoy, you know, the full facet of what Peter intended to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, for that type of discount, there's not, you know, a lot for the family and not for me. So, I mean, I'm really took this approach and dedicated hundreds of man hours of my own time and time away from the family as a dedicated person to Peter. So I really want this to get to the fans and ultimately the full experience. So if you go to the MySpace, definitely check out the footage of sightings of Peter and absolute, you know, his heyday of investigations and his proudest moments are certainly there on the MySpace as well. See his pictures with family and friends and the weddings that, you know, he presided over in the pictures section, and certainly sign the guest book. And also, too, visit parainvestigations.com to hear what Bob has of the evidence that he captured with Brian in both, you know, recordings. Actual, on two separate recordings at parainvestigations.com under the evidence heading from what he captured in December. And compare them with Peter's evidence from 1991 in the videos.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Bob, what do you have in store for the future?
Just a lot more investigations and hopefully continue the work that Peter started on the Queen Mary with Jackie and the other spirits. And, you know, I'd like to think that we have many years to come to continue the research that he started. I think there's a lot of work left to be done. I would also encourage anyone who might know of any audio experts that in the field or even without, you know, outside of the field that, you know, do forensic audio work that contact me. You can go to parainvestigations.com and contact one of our team members or, you know, send it to me and help us match that with the 1991 Peter James audio, because I'm always looking for people to come in and do a forensic audio match of that. We've got a couple of preliminary results that have come in that are real favorable, but I'm looking, you know, ideally for someone, you know, preferably in the law enforcement community or something like that, that you know, will be happy to sign off on their work, you know, no matter what the results are.
Right.
And if it's a match, they'll be willing to sign off on it. So that's I keep working towards that, and John and my team, you know, Planet Paranormal Investigators are all trying to, you know, continue working towards that as well as our other investigations.
Excellent.
So, and stop by Planet Paranormal and listen to some good radio shows, too.
Yeah, I know some of the Para-X shows are also on Planet Paranormal.
Yeah, those are some of the newer shows that we've taken on. There's some really great shows, and so we're thrilled to have them, and, you know, I'm always happy to have new shows, and so, yeah, we're just real excited. So go to planetparanormal.com and give a listen to them.
Great. And I'll put the links up in the Para-X forum and also on the Soul Seekers RSS feed, and you can find those also in our signature in the forum and on our website. But, guys, we've run out of time and really appreciate you coming on again and taking the time to be with us.
We really appreciate being on.
And John, thanks.
I almost forgot to hit the mute button. There we go. No, hey, on behalf of Peter's family, his friends, and, you know, his former investigative team, no, thanks for having us on and promoting his book. I know he'd be greatly appreciative of this.
Well, it's been our pleasure. And everybody that's listening, thanks so much. And tune in next Friday night from 9 to 11 London time or 4 to 6 Eastern. And the rest of the time zones in America, you'll can figure out what those are. I won't go through the whole spiel. But next week we've got Tim Jones from Sandwell Paranormal Research Team over here in the UK is going to be our guest, so you don't want to miss that. But John and Bob, thanks again so much for being on the show, and thanks everybody for listening.
Great, thanks, Gil.
Anytime.
Thanks. And we'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting live from London every Friday from 9 to 11 p.m., 4 to 6 Eastern, the Soul Seekers bring you the latest topics and most influential guests in the paranormal world right here on Para-X Radio.
This is James Riley from Ballistic Etna, and you are listening to the best in everything paranormal on Soul Seekers Supernatural Radio.
Check out our website at soulseekers.org.uk.
This is the Para-X Radio Network.
When a child is abducted, every second counts. That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.